big old can. Good time, unwind, falling out of love in the same night. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy. I'm getting hammered, sitting right here at the floor of Bama.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, plenty of time, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the show. Just hit me up there, and we'll have the discussion there. But joining us now, he was very patient, waiting for me to ramble for the last half hour. But Joshua McGee, he's running for the 1st Congressional District here in South Alabama. Well, it could be a crowded field, but we'll have to wait and see which way that goes. But Josh joins us here in the studio. Josh, good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming by. I do appreciate you coming by the way, to the Fairhope Bureau, as we call it. But, well, I always start here with this with these kind of interviews, like – sort of talk about who you are and your decision to run for Congress.
Sure. 25 years of military service. I was a Green Beret and retired as a Master Sergeant. Decided to get in after sitting on the sidelines and watching that our current leadership up in D.C. that we've had and past leadership has kind of forgotten why they've been there. And when you go up there, you forget the people and people that you represent. It gets tiring. And to sit there and go, okay, wait a minute, I'm just going to elect a different leader. I'm going to elect someone else. And you see the pattern take place over and over and over again, and you don't have anyone up there that is going up there for the people. And that's where you get people like myself. You've got Jared Hudson. You've got Rich McCormick, Pat Harrigan, all these military members that have finally said, hey, enough's enough. We've served. We know how to serve, and we're going up there for the people.
So you think there's maybe having more of a veteran presence in those chambers really would maybe improve things?
I think that it's absolutely already improving things. If you look at those members that are in their districts that are former military members, you're seeing a substantial turnaround. So,
you decided to run, and obviously this is a vacant seat, but really – talk about the status quo, and then as a member of the 1st Congressional District, if you were to be elected, what would you like to see change? What can you – I mean, you know, one out of 435 members, what would you like to see changed in the House of Representatives?
Right now I want to see as far as District 1 goes, let's turn around and take a look at what's going on with our veterans. You've got the Wiregrass right now. It takes someone 2 hours to get to a VA medical center, 2 hours. But they can spend 6 minutes and drive up to a hospital or up the road. So we've got a big problem with our VA hospitals. They don't have the resources they need. We have doctors there that are sitting at, 300% over what they need to be. And then you've got rural hospitals right now that have a problem with they don't have the funding coming in to keep their doors open. It's not hard to turn around and give our veterans actual real health care where they can choose the hospitals they want to go to, and that would also help our rural hospitals and keep their doors open. Right now you're looking at, if you were to go in and say, hey, I need to get an appointment at the VA, you're 3 months out. And there are many times that 3 months gets canceled. So what we can do right out of the gate is the fact that you were talking earlier about redrawn districts. Well, if you look at the veteran population in District 1, you're sitting at the second largest concentration of veterans, and a lot of them don't have the medical care that they need. So I have a heavy focus on getting our veterans, our VA system corrected. That's something that I can do. I've got a lot of support from current sitting members that we're also working on that.
Well, I'll tell you, my father served in the Air Force and in the Army, and I remember we moved around a lot as a kid. He was in and out of VA hospital all the time, all throughout the Southeast, and it's wildly inconsistent. Just kind of an observation as a child, going from one to the other. Some are nice, and in some cases even better than the local offerings of the community that you lived in. And then some are just, it might as well be a homeless shelter or something. And I just, to me, there, I always kind of wondered why that was. And, you know, like, how do you get some of these guys sort of are all on the same program? Now, it's been a while since I've been in. My late father, I haven't been to the VA hospital in probably 8-9 years because of that. But my observation was always that. Like, it was never, you know, it never seemed like something's working here, but they couldn't make it work over here.
A lot of it comes down to your visions and your leadership. So visions are different regions for the VA hospitals. And right now you've got some of the problems that you're running into is that those visions actually go across state lines. And someone that is sitting in Vision 7 up in District 1 will end up going between Florida and Alabama and possibly Georgia to get medical care. So now you're talking about going across state lines with medical care, trying to get appointments. That creates a number of issues. You'll also have to look at funding. Now, when I'm looking at funding and how it's actually done between different states, you got one vision that's over three states, but you got three different states funding their VA hospitals differently. So it creates a huge problem.
Yeah, because every state has its own veterans.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then we learned all about that with this episode with Governor Ivey. I say this about Alabama, and I think they do a pretty decent job as a state. I remember when my dad died and not really being familiar with the VA system here in the state, but at the time really did the follow-ups and made sure that, you know, they worked with my mother and made sure she was getting everything that she was qualified to get regarding the VA, that you really seemed like you do a decent job, at least decent enough in Alabama.
As far as Alabama goes, there's a lot of improvement needs to be made. I talked to a lady named Deborah on Friday. She's been trying for 4 years to get her husband's benefits that passed away from a lung cancer after 33 years of military service. He retired shortly after he passed away. That's Alabama. So there are problems that you're not aware of. I know guys that are being released out onto the public to get community care, and they can't get the medications filled because they're outside the VA requirements.
Well, is your vision sort of, well, let's maybe decentralize this bureaucracy allow for private offerings to be used for veterans?
You have to. So you need to look at the current problem with the VA right now is going to come down to funding, tools, assets, doctors, nurses, things like that that aren't available or they're overworked. And you've got to be able to relieve some of that strain. You also have to look at some of the other problems we have going on in the states with our current rural hospitals, and that's a lot of Alabama, that are they're losing patients. And if you turn around and privatize the VA hospitals, what you're going to do is you're going to allow for those veterans to actually start seeking other doctors with proper health care. They shouldn't have any different health care than our current sitting members. So I think that the health care needs to be equal.
Joined by Josh McKee, he's running for the first congressional district open seat, the Republican nomination here on the program. Well, beyond Veterans Affairs, kind of looking at Washington, D.C., it's a Republican town right now. I mean, they have both chambers of Congress and they have the White House. It could be this situation. Should you be elected? You know, historically, Democrats are the party, I should say, that's not in power, makes gains, and you could be in a minority. I mean, what do you see there? What do you want to do beyond veterans? What do you want to do to really impact the status quo?
Right now, bring back the America First, people first, representatives actually representing their constituents, not going up there for self-interest or personal gain. That should never be a requirement. If you're not going up there for the people, then go find a different job. You don't belong up there, and we need to start holding our current politicians, regardless of party, accountable. Corruption needs to be prosecuted. There's no way around it. You break the law, go to jail. It's that simple. Regardless if you're a senator or a congressman or any other elected official, there's no way around it. And that's one thing that needs to be addressed in D.C. And you're not going to get that if you got people up there that are self-motivated. I want people up there like myself that are going up there for the people. and making sure that, hey, when I come back, you know, I didn't do any stock training. I didn't do anything that could be construed as illegal or self-gain. Representing and service, providing a service to the people should come with a personal sacrifice. And that's what it means to serve.
Foreign policy, and this was asked from the text line, Israel, Ukraine, what's the right approach?
No, you don't send $200 billion or any cash dollars over to Ukraine or any other ally, and I'm going to tell you why. I can't track where that's money going, where it goes. I don't know if it's getting embezzled back. People talk about that. It talks about where people, you know, politicians getting that money coming back to them. Unless you have an audit system that's pristine, you're never going to know where that money goes. So, no, what I'd like to do is take that money that you want to invest in our allies and turn it around and invest it in the American people, create what's needed and send over tangible items. If they need beans and bullets, send them over. But don't send cash money. And I'm not okay with that. I'd rather invest in the American people where they're actually creating the jobs and working and making the things that we need, creating a tax revenue base that we can turn around, and it's a return on our investment.
Isn't that, though, a lot of it is just beans and bullets that they assign a price tag to it and make it sound like it's a big, big number? And that may be the value or the street value or the market value of whatever we're sending them, but it's not really a tangible cash.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So when you turn around and you're telling me that I'm going to use something that was up in the Congress. They got a bag of bolts that cost like $75,000.
Right.
Come on now. That's ridiculous. That's wasteful spending. And one of the things that when it comes to foreign affairs and money and appropriations is the defense spending bill. I can tell you right now, being 25 years in the military, there is no way that I'm going to approve a bill that has wasteful spending like that in it. Even if it goes against my party, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to add to the debt. I'm not going to turn around and say, okay, let's turn around and give, you know, we need $50 billion for new ships, but in this bill also has another $50 billion of wasteful spending. I'm not going to agree to it. We can't keep adding to the debt with the guise of defense spending.
Well, as far as we'll take it one by one, as far as Ukraine's concerned, how much U.S. involvement is appropriate? How much beans and bullets at all should we be sending, if any?
We need to look at it as an investment back into the American people. So if I'm going to turn around and say, hey, they need $200 billion, okay, that's not something I'm okay with, but we'll use that number since that's what was approved. That $200 billion needs to be $200 million into American jobs, into our defense sector where we have people that are creating these missiles. We have a $4 billion defense sector right here in Alabama. $4 billion revenue. Well, why don't we put a portion of that into the people in Alabama, into our communities, and let them create what's needed and send it overseas? I'm okay with that because at that point, at least we're investing back into our communities, giving people success.
In Israel, now this is always the touchy one for a lot of people. What do you think?
Well, Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, and he's why I'm here today. I had a brain tumor that I survived. I couldn't talk or walk, and now I'm thankful for him. And I'll tell you right now, he's going to come back there. And the way I see it is I'm going to stand with Christ, and that's what it means to me.
So, I mean, just as far as what we, I mean, the Israeli government and, you know, what's going on there and the different sides, it's, I guess, a different question to say we should support Israel, but what is the right way to support them?
They're one of our biggest allies in that area. And as far as the funding, the cash, the money and things like that that get sent over, we need to take a close look at that. And where it's going, what are they using it for? They're a little more open to auditing and than Ukraine. So I think that we take it one step at a time, but understand that our nation was built on Christian values and Christ came from that area. He's going to be coming back to that area. And I think it's important that we protect that area and the faith of Christianity.
Well, and we're kind of wrapping up on this question, on this part, on this discussion. I mean, how precarious do you see the world right now? I mean, we always talk about, well, this is going to be World War III. This is the next big thing. And you've kind of been hearing that off and on for the last, I mean, and you're a military guy. I mean, like, when the China's rising and the Chinese are making advances, like, where is the state of the world right now? And what should the United States, what kind of footing should we be on?
I think right now the state of the world is something that we've seen over the last 20 years, where it's up and down with different wars. And on, you know, the news might report about one or two, but on average, we're probably involved in about 80 different wars throughout the world. I think the biggest footing that we need to have right now is in cybersecurity, and Space Command is a big one with that. Space Command is not out there with aliens and spaceships. It's about cybersecurity. And right now, I think that's the focus that we need to have with AI coming out. We need to have a very strong focus on our cybersecurity and the safety of our nation's networks.
Let's work in a quick break here. We got Joshua McKee. He's running for the 1st Congressional District open seat for that Republican nomination. We're going to get to him on the other side. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will.
Once was a thought inside my head.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Still a couple on the program in the next hour. You're able to stick around for Bradley Chase, my colleague at Breitbart News. He is their Capitol Hill Bureau Chief. We'll talk to him about the likely government shutdown. And, you know where I stand on that. I think this is all just kind of pro wrestling, but that's what they do in Washington, D.C. Still with us, though, Josh McKee. He is a candidate for the 1st Congressional District here in South Alabama. He's with us. Well, what would you describe yourself as? I mean, are you MAGA? Or where do you think you fall into the current Republican spectrum?
I'd say I would fall into MAGA. I've been a Trump supporter since he's been on The Apprentice. I think the country needs to have businessmen running it.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's a different sort of populism, and you watch things come and go. And I'll say this, like, Tea Party lasted for a couple of years. Then, you know, it's the sort of country club Republicanism before that, and Reaganism, and this one's had a lot of staying power here.
Yeah, well, the reason is that look at the leader that Trump is. See, a lot of people think that leadership is something that anyone can step into. Leadership, it's something you have. It's not something you can get taught or trained. You're either a good leader or you're not. Yes. And Trump is a phenomenal leader. And you're getting a lot of strong people coming behind him. Same types of A-type personality, strong leadership. People that aren't afraid to be questioned at any time, anywhere.
Yeah. So. Well, and, you know, I think there's the thing I would describe about Trump, they do like his stylistically. His approach, but there's this, like, maybe it's not as deeply rooted in ideology, but it's sort of a throwback to, like, kind of Cold War patriotism, and we're proud to be Americans, and Rocky taking on the Soviets, or whatever, Rambo taking on the Soviets, you know, that there was sort of a romance to that about this country in an era when we're told we have to look at America through this lens, this critical lens, and what, you know, all the sins of our past.
No, I think what it is that American people forgot the values of what this country was founded on. And Trump's reminding everyone out there of what this country was founded on. And it's America first value. Americans come first. He's the only president that hasn't made money while sitting in office. Take that into case. I mean, he's all American first. And I'm going to get behind anyone that is going to stand for our country the same way I did for 25 years.
I mean, he's lost money in office, right? Yeah, absolutely. The value of his properties have plummeted. They're not what they used to be because of the, the power and the news and, you know, the way he is branded.
Well, when you go into service, and I said it earlier, it's a personal sacrifice. you're going to have to give up yourself for people. And that's what it means. And there's not a lot of people that are willing to say, hey, I'm going to put my entire life second because the American people need to come first. That's what it takes to lead. That's the leadership that we're getting from President Trump. It's one of the reasons why I love the man. I think he's great.
Well, he is, like I said, he's got this staying power, this lasting power that in American politics is like kind of a populism. But it's been around a while. Hey, Josh, we got to get a break in here. If folks want to find out more about your campaign, where can they look?
McKeeForCongress.com, McKee for Congress.com.
Y'all check that out. Josh, thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. How to stand up.